Well, what better thing to do on a rainy Saturday than sit for a little while? How lucky we are. Let's do introductions around. I'm sure not everybody knows everybody.
I'm Britt.
Wendy.
Lucy.
Isaiah.
Chris.
Donalyn.
Ron.
Julian.
Angie. Been admiring the flowers and the candle to go with. Did you bring those, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Wendy brought them. Really nice. As I came here this morning, I have a new way of coming, which is to get off of the freeway before Alameda and come down what is... I always forget the name. It's Washington, actually. It turns into Lafayette. Bascom, I guess. It's the Bascom that goes toward the university. And then you can turn right on Newhall, and there are some of the most beautiful sights that anyone can see at this time of year on that street. It's just down there, just a few blocks. I recommend that everybody go down and see. They're the oldest trees ever. They're the first trees. They grew during dinosaur times. And we still have them. And in the autumn, they are glorious. It's not like maples. It's not like oaks. It's not like the East Coast, where everything is an incredible glory of different colors. It's just one great golden explosion. They're called ginkgo. They're originally Chinese, I think. And when I was a girl, we had one outside of Nyford Junior High School. And every year our teachers would tell us, now that is the oldest tree in the world. So I have this special feeling for it. But I also, as I drove in past them, began thinking about beauty. There are so many things that we're taken up with. So many ideas, so many problems, our own problems, the world's problems. And then we have practice and practice problems. Often our mind begins to simply be a very busy place for solving things. And Zen, of course, is a very serious, Buddhism is a very serious subject. And so as Zen students, we can be solemn. It is certainly a solemn situation that we're in, one that we hardly understand, to be this vulnerable, soft, living creature from where we don't know and to where we don't know, simply trying to make our way day by day. And yet there's this whole other side, this side that's really not talk aboutable, just as the essence of our practice really has no words either. Because it's an experience. Of course, we're always eager to put our experiences into words. I am. I'm always trying to do that. But the original experience can never be reached by words. And often the words get in the way of the experience, and especially the ideas. Oh, well, we don't have to pay attention to that. Or sometimes people believe that it's trivial, that the beautiful is trivial. I have a friend who used to call poets beauty freaks. I always got very upset about that. How can she say that? But it's true in a way, and I think for good reason. Shelley said, truth is beauty and beauty is truth. That's all we know and that's all we need to know. And although it seems very strange, Buddha said the same thing. Buddha was asked about beauty and he said, someone suggested that beauty was sort of extraneous to serious practice, and Buddha said, no, that is it. But how often we forget. And I often talk about our practices being scientific, of not depending on a belief system to kind of shore up our precarious life, not creating some kind of artificial support for ourselves on which we have to believe because we don't know. I was always embarrassed as a child when people started talking about their beliefs so easily and so like they really knew, and I knew they didn't know. I knew they were just saying stuff. I would go to Sunday school with my little brothers and they would be singing about God is love and Jesus is, and all these things, and everybody would be so mellow, and then we'd get in the car and my little brothers would be fighting with each other all the way home, and parents were screaming at them, and suddenly all this beautiful life and love was out the window. I thought, wait a minute, this, how do we really experience this? How do we know? In a way, that's our koan. It's our practice. How do we know what we know? And how do we allow ourselves to be truly who we are? Yesterday, there was a Shuso ceremony at Chikoji, and I slipped in at the last minute and got to witness it and be a part of the ceremony. And in the ceremony, the Shuso, Donna Lynn did this just not so long ago, is on the hot seat, sits up in the teacher's seat, and answers Dharma questions from anybody in the audience. And they can be, you know, what is the meaning of life? Or how do you feel right now? Or what did you ask? How do you know what you know? Yes, it would have been a good one.
And you were invited.
didn't just sneak in. She was invited.
But it's a challenge to a student who's been practicing for a long time to find an authentic voice in a public way. It's really terrifying. It's an amazing experience to be truly authentic and speak from not just the heart, certainly the heart, but the belly. To not know what you're going to say and to be able to answer with complete courage without knowing what your words are going to be until you say them. It's an amazing experience. I hope you all have a chance. I almost thought of doing a Shosan ceremony today instead of a talk. But then I thought, no, let's wait and do it some Tuesday night instead, so that a lot of people will be here. And Shosan is when the teacher sits in the hot seat and receives anybody's question. Bam, just like that. It's terrifying and very wonderful. The teaching just flies back and forth across the room like this. It's like electricity or something. A true voice, an honest voice. It's really about being completely honest. Somebody asked this man, Dan, who was the Shuso, he asked him a lot of questions, and finally he did really well with the questions, and finally the last question from this one person was, well, you've got this nice family, two little girls and a wife, and you're doing so well. Can I come and live with you? And bam, he said, no. Yes, it was. That was the only one that was really from here. But we are our gift in the world, you could say, each one of us. Each one of us is a voice and a heart and a belly. Each one of us is a truth and experience. And how we're able to express that is different for each one of us. And discovering that, discovering really our heart's desire, is our work. If we don't have belief, it doesn't mean that our doubt is cold, harsh. It doesn't mean we're cynical. In fact, in terms of our experience of the beautiful, what we feel is gratitude and awe. We don't talk about the devotional very much in Zen. Zen always comes across as kind of austere. I'm sorry Diana had to leave. She practices in a Rinzai monastery up on Whidbey Island. And she said because they're monks that, and they have a very, very serious Japanese teacher, whose name I always forget, but who's very strict. And she said they never smile, that the monks are always very, very serious. the essence of our practice is compassion. The essence of our practice is what we chanted this morning, loving kindness. And as we allow ourselves to open to our experience and be moved by the beautiful, to be moved by what touches us, we begin to realize how things are. It's not so personal. It's awesome and huge. So I've told this before. I had a friend, a Tibetan friend, who was going to the California Institute for whatever, Integral Studies, I guess it is. And I would take walks with her around Berkeley. She was a very amazing young woman. And she, one time in springtime, we were walking along, and there was this rhododendron bush that was just gorgeous. And she stopped and she bowed to it and she offered it to Buddha. She said, "I offer the beauty of this bush to Buddha." Oh my word. I thought, ah, we could do that. We could do that any day. We could offer all of it to Buddha. There's another side to this, and that is that there's lots that seems to be pretty ugly. Things that we don't like to look at or listen to. Get grumpy about the traffic. And yet that's all a function of how we choose to see. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We can choose to judge. And I sometimes tell another story, which some of you have heard, that once I had been sitting sesshin and I had to go home. And I went to my little studio, which was across the yard from the house, early in the morning. I thought, well, at least I can go and sit in my little studio for a while if I can't go do sit zazen. So I went down the steps and across the yard, and I was stopped under the almond tree by the most beautiful sight I had ever seen. It was on the ground, and it was gray, very, very soft gray, with dewdrops all through it in rainbow colors. It was so lovely. And I stood there for a long time with this, just looking at it and thinking, oh, the world is amazing. And then way in the back of my mind, a voice said, "Dog turd." That's what it was. That's what happens when you get... So, ever since then, I've realized that a lot of what we think we know and see is just automatic judgments that are churned out of us all the time without even thinking. And because it's like that, we don't even really experience the world. We just experience our ideas about the world. And if our mind is reverts constantly to the negative side, then we don't like what we see most of the time. And we don't like what we experience most of the time. And one of the functions, I think, of the beautiful is to wake us up again. And not just with ginkgo trees, but music. The sound of the traffic. The berries hanging on the bush and the birds in it. Anything can wake us up. If we begin to appreciate it. So that's what the essence of Buddhist practice is. We chant it in everything that we do. We always vow to save all sentient beings. That's our basic vow. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. I vow to be here for it. I vow to be it with everyone. When Buddha was enlightened, he said, "This is wonderful. All beings." That was his first words. "All beings are enlightened with me." He saw the beauty. So I hope you go home that way. Go take a look. There's a whole lot on the ground and a whole lot still up there. Are there questions? Donna Lynn?
Did you choose your pillow or was it there for you?
I chose it.
Not as bright,
but the same, yeah. Wendy?
In finding one's authentic self or voice, how should one handle people who tell you what it is?
Oh, good question. Yes. It depends on the situation. Sometimes you have to be somewhere else with them, you know, or be with them as best you can, as clearly and best you can, as lovingly as you can, without arguing about it. But most of our authenticness isn't even spoken. It's how we are. And that we can be wherever we are. And that tells a lot. So maybe not depend so much on words in some situations. And just let your way express it. Which it does, whether you want to or not, actually.
Yes, I tend to rather loudly. It seems like there should be a different way.
Yeah, sometimes I think we just have to bow to a situation. Thank you very much, you know, and let it be what it is. And keep your own counsel yourself, because that's your authentic self. But you don't have to inflict it on anybody else. you could just be it. Donovan?
That question, my response to that question for me is to listen. It's now become a joke that my mother told me years ago, now quit your job and become an artist. And then I have built my art studio several years ago. I'm really loving it. And so she's very proud of herself because I told you so, you know, just be happy. And I got a dog last year, which I'm just madly in love with. And I was just on the phone recently. And my mother said, don't you remember that report you wrote in third grade? It was all about dogs. You've had dogs your whole life. You know, it's like I'm just rediscovering it. You know? So I have a little bit of it's because it's true. So, you know, I'm so close to myself sometimes that I do, for me, I need to pay attention sometimes to people see in me or in my effect in the world. I'm not sure that, you know, that's totally authenticness, but it is certainly the clue of clues about me. It's funny now. It wasn't funny at the time.
Don?
I try, you know, day to day to accept myself as I am. But sometimes I run into situations where I make other people angry. And sometimes I'm not sure whether or if they don't like something I do. It could be relatively innocent or something on the highway where I'm probably shouldn't, you know, put on my brakes when they're tailgating me, or something silly like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get road rage, or just whatever. And then I kind of want to go, is that me? or is that my karma? Am I sort of reaping the consequences of something I did 30 years ago that I've long forgotten about? But that's interesting, because that kind of leads to, usually I'll reflect on it. I'll try not to react to the anger.
Mm.
It's like if I get angry, I'll try not to react to that. But then I kind of think, is that me? Is it just me? Or is it...
Is it you that did the deed, you mean?
Is the situation because of my misbehavior? Or is it them? Maybe they got a problem. Maybe they have a problem. Like my brother said, when he's in a bad mood, you got a problem? Well, yeah, maybe I do, but, you know, sometimes without even meaning any harm, you get into these situations where you suddenly get to be
yes.
of somebody's anger.
Yes. Yeah,
maybe
it's true.
Maybe partly your fault. I mean, maybe there is some kind of original sin in the since we're all imperfect, we're all contributing to this, or maybe it's their problem, you know. And that's an interesting one.
Well, one of the Tibetan, what do they call it? They have a whole series of little sayings, and one of them is to roll all blame into one and take it. So I think that can be misunderstood as a sort of masochistic attitude, which is not what it means. It means to be like a warrior and accept it in this sense, you know, being okay, be my guest, sir, whatever it is. And if you can do that from a strong and loving way, it makes life a whole lot easier. Because otherwise the blame goes back and forth. You know, he did that, or what did I do, or how can I, you know, and it just, it's a tangled mess, and it's all made up in here. It's just all ideas at 65 miles an hour. Which is sort of insane.
Yeah, I always try to, usually I'll reflect on it, and by the next day I say, well, you know, that's just kind of what happened.
Yeah.
And I won't be bothered by that. But what you said just reminded me of a wonderful, I guess it's a painting or a picture of a statue somewhere, some kind of art hat or. It's at Shasta Abbey in one of the guest rooms, and it's this really determined, this kind of, not a deva, but a, whatever the more male archetype is, and he's like a warrior, like just, and he's got these chains, trying to
break the chain.
These chains by, you know, pushing out his chest.
Like
Animal Over There?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. But I remember when I saw that, I stayed in that room. That photograph of the statue was really heavenly.
Yes.
That's a spiritual warrior.
Yes. On either side of a temple in Japan are incredible warrior-like figures that are set there. They're taller than humans, and they're men with spears and big muscles and, you know, and a fierce, very fierce face. And it looks like, you know, they're trying to chase us out of the temple, but no, it's protecting the temple and keeping it safe for us to go in. So,
well, that again is a, you know, a shift in paradigm, the way you look at things.
Yeah.
I was just terrified, I forget the name of these things, and until someone pointed out to me exactly that. Mm-hmm. It's not to keep you. It's not to hurt you, it's to protect you. I mean, it just shifted all these fears.
Julian?
It's the whole, like, how we are perceived by others and how it, that's kind of like, I mean, when it comes down to it, to me it's like a funhouse mirror in a way. And in terms of, like, trying to get to the truth of, is it my fault or is it their fault, I think that kind of, at the end, I mean, maybe one of them is true, who knows, but at the end, I don't think there's much of a choice but to kind of just be still and not let, I don't know, any kind of fear eat up at you, because that just makes it worse.
Yeah.
Like, if I am at fault, you know, okay, if I'm, you know, that kind of thing, and just keep going.
Yes, exactly.
It's hard. It's so easy to just react and get defensive because, you know, it feels like we're being attacked, but there's nothing really, the whole attack is kind of the delusion in itself.
Exactly. We often become a target for projection, and we really can't help that. There's nothing we can do if people see us a certain way. No, you don't have to accept the projection, but you have to recognize that that's what's happening. And sometimes you can disabuse people and say, no, you know, I'm not what you think I am at all. But usually that doesn't help. You know, they have to take their projection back themselves, and they have to sometimes live a long time before they get it. I went through that with one of my kids. I don't know what that was all about. I still don't know what that projection was, but they got some kind of, I don't know, bee in their bonnet or something, and they were mad at me, and I never could figure out why they were so angry. And it went on for several years. It's very painful. And suddenly it was over. And I know something happened, and I'll never know, because they're grown. I mean, they're way grown. And they were going through a lot of changes, and somehow I just became the one that could, that it happened to. I don't know why. But I think it often happens that way.
I went through the same thing this book with my mother. So many years we did it. And then I figured a lot of reflection and maturing, and I went away. But and then it was a self-understanding too.
Yes.
You know, there were a lot of
things.
But she's very calm and sweet now.
Yeah.
A little sad about the memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very normal.
Yes, I know. I know. It's one of the risks of being a parent, is losing your kids for a while. If not for much longer than that, it's easy to happen. And from the parent side, it's to be patient and keep faith with them. No, that's what I ended up doing. I just kept loving them. And it's fine now. You'd never know anything happened. Sometimes I want to ask them, what was that? But I don't think I should do that. Thank you all.